Thank you for joining us for this chapel message from the campus of Columbia International University in Columbia, South Carolina. Our mission at CIU is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ.
Good morning. How are all of you? It is a blessing to be here, and so I thank you for having me. As he said, I am with the Life Training Institute. And so I have the privilege of traveling a world making the case for life. Now, most of us are familiar with what we call Christian apologetics. And one of the arms of apologetics is pro-life apologetics. Now, I know that when we talk about the pro-life issue, that there are people who find themselves on one side, and there are others who find themselves on the other. And oftentimes it becomes a battle of words, sometimes even insults. But you see, I believe that it's important that we contend for the truth. And so what does that mean then, to contend for the truth? As believers, we also see in 1 Peter 3, starting in verse 15, it actually says to set apart Christ as Lord, and that we are always to be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have. It also tells us what our posture is supposed to be. Our posture is one of gentleness and respect. But you see, I now want us to look at which side of the aisle we may stand on. And I want us to recognize this is not about Democrat, Republican. This is about a human rights issue. And if the pro-life position is correct and accurate, that abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being, then we can't pretend that this issue isn't happening in our society. If it's true that the unborn is a valuable human being, then, ladies and gentlemen, we must be speakers of truth. We must examine the evidence, and that's why I'm here today, then, to make that case for life. Today, I'm going to actually do that in four steps. First, we're going to clarify the issue and simplify it. Second, we're going to answer what is the unborn using science. Third, we're going to look at what is it that makes us valuable human beings? Why do we have this search for human equality? And lastly, we're going to discuss what is our responsibility as men and women of God. I want us to consider the verse. In John 8, 31 through 34, Jesus is speaking up on the Mount of Olives. And this is where the Pharisees, they bring to him the woman that is caught in adultery. And if we look further, we actually see that this is where he says in verse 31 that we shall know the truth, and it's the truth that sets us free. And anyone that is on the side of truth will listen to him. Let's think through that for a moment. What does it mean then to know truth? But I also want us to consider this. What happens in a society where truth has been removed or truth is intentionally being suppressed? What happens? And to kind of help us to see that point further, to break it down, I want to share a little bit from this movie, one of my favorite movies. How many of you have ever seen the movie called The Giver? Raise your hand. Oh, nice. Okay. Yes, a lot of you have. Okay. Now, for those of you, for those of you that did not raise your hand, that's fine. What I'm going to do, though, is still take you through what we actually see happening. In this dystopian society, we have one of the main characters, Jonas, and his mentor, who is called the giver. You see, in their society, it actually happens after, and we don't really know what happened, but we know something horrible happened. Mankind was so evil. We had so much sin. We hurt people. We caused great depths of pain. And so after something horrible that happened, the elders of that community decided, why don't we create our own community, a new community? And this is from the very beginning. It says that the whole goal of that society is true equality. You see, that sounds great because in our society, we hear people talk about equality, equality, equality. It's in the news, social media. But you see, in this movie, The Giver, in their attempt to create equality, there was a great cost. You see, they actually erased all memories of the past. That meant nobody knew anything that had happened before they were in this community. You see, it's very much as if they're humanoids or robots operating. And in fact, they have no feelings. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone is one color. There's no religion because their other goal is for everyone to be the same. Sameness. Everybody is supposed to fit in. But on top of that, they've also removed fear, pain. But with removing pain, they also removed joy, happiness. And because in this society that they have created, because everything is so controlled, they don't even know words like morality. They don't even understand words such as truth because everything is so controlled. But you see, what they don't realize is that there is a great level of deception going on. You see, what they don't realize is there is discrimination. In a community where there is supposed to be true equality, there is actually discrimination. Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, it actually gets worse because not only is there discrimination, there is intentional death. They actually dispose of human beings who are elderly, and they also dispose of babies through infanticide, those that may not weigh enough, those that maybe they think are going to possibly be sick or be a burden to society. But you see, because all truth has been removed, they don't realize what's going on. In fact, they have ceremonies that celebrate their release, which is actually the death. You see, they don't know because truth has been suppressed in their society. You see, ladies and gentlemen, let's pause it right there for a moment. You see, we're not that different in some ways from that society. Oftentimes, when we talk about truth, many times people will say things like, well, that's your truth. This is my truth. And when you speak with authority and make a moral declaration that something is wrong, people look at you like you're high. When the reality is there, we have to ask, yes or no? People like, what, are you doing marijuana? No. It's like, people do think, what's going on with this person? But the reality is we have to ask some important questions. You see, there were two characters in The Giver, Jonas, and at graduation, we see at the beginning that they have a ceremony of graduation, and that is when they receive what their job is going to be, their purpose for life. And he receives, the only person in his class to receive what's called the receiver of memory. You see, memories, that is where the truth lies. That is the truth of where they came from to where they are right now. And the person that is going to transmit the truth from him is the existing or the current operating receiver of memory. And now he is the giver because he's going to pass that down to Jonas. So let us continue here. As I said, I am going to make the case for life. You see, one of the themes that's in this movie and in many different movies, in books, is an idea of whether or not some human beings matter more than others, or whether it's okay to dispose of or kill some human beings, especially if they're going to inconvenience us. Let us think through that for a moment. Think about that. Do some human beings matter more than others? You see, we have to distinguish between subjective or objective truth claims. As I was saying earlier, we do live in a society where oftentimes when you make a moral declaration that abortion, for example, is the intentional killing of an innocent human being, and therefore it's wrong, people will often say, well, you are free to hold that position, but I am free to have mine. You see, what's happened is our society has confused the type of claim that was made. You see, objective truth claims, and then there are also subjective. Let's deal with subjective first. Subjective actually deals with the subject themselves and their preferences or their likes or their tastes. If I were to say to you, Taco Bell is better than McDonald's, how many of you would agree with me? Oh, look at these fast fooders over here. Okay, but what if I were to say this? Taco Bell's tacos, in fact, they're Locos Tacos, okay? That's the cure to obesity. How many of you would agree with that statement? No, some of you are like, yeah, we'll be praying for you, right? Yes, now here's the thing. We know that's not true. But you see, those were two different types of claims. One was dealing with the subject and preferences or tastes, that Taco Bell is better than McDonald's or vice versa. But the other one was objective, and it was dealing with the objects in discussion. You see, we said Taco Bell, specifically the Doritos Locos Tacos, and how it relates to the cure for what? Obesity. Now, obviously, I was incorrect because we know eating Taco Bell is not going to cure obesity. In fact, you're probably going to look like a giant taco if you eat it all the time. But we do know that that means that, you see, when we deal with the subjective, it is about taste. It is about a preference, but objective actually deals with the nature of reality. That which is right and that which is wrong. That means when someone makes an objective moral truth claim, we can also determine if it's right or wrong, true or false. You see, preferences do not fall into a category of right or wrong. But when we deal with that which is objectively true, it's again dealing with the nature of reality. Either those tacos do cure obesity or they don't. There is a definitive answer and a response. You see, when we talk about the issue of abortion, people often confuse the type of claim that was made. And they think it's about a personal taste when no, it's not. It is objective because we're dealing with reality, the reality and the nature of abortion, and what does it do to the unborn human being? Either it kills the unborn or it doesn't. You see, true or false? And that's why we have to make sure that we have it right on this issue. Now, some people say things like this. I'm sure you've probably seen bumper stickers like this. Listen, don't like abortion? Well, then don't have one. Now, initially, that sounds great, but you see, there's a word that they have interjected in here that actually makes this statement actually make not much sense. The word like. Like has nothing to do with whether or not abortion is right or wrong. You see, what they've done is try to make it a fast food kind of a claim where it's about preference and taste, when the reality is, it is literally about the reality and the nature of abortion. Consider this with me. Think about this. Don't like slavery? Then don't own one. We would not be okay if somebody actually said that. Think about it. Now, what is it that makes that wrong? You see, but likewise, we still have people that will say things like, hey, don't like abortion? Fine. Then don't have one. And so that's why my next step then is to clarify what is the unborn. Think of it this way. Imagine if you all, 5 years from now, you're married, you have little children, and you're in the kitchen cooking. And while your back is turned, one of your kids runs in saying, Mom, Dad, can I kill this? Can I kill this? Now your back is turned so you can't see what they have. So what question would you all have to ask before you could say yes or no? Yes, what is it? What is it? Now what would you all say yes to? A snake? Spiders? Yes, spiders. What else? Okay, yes. Now what would you all say no? Absolutely not. A sibling. Yes. Thank you for not killing brother. Yes. Okay. And somebody said mom. Yes, that's good. Now, let us consider, my friends, why this question is so important. There is only one question at the heart of the abortion debate, and it's this one. What is the unborn? Think about it for a moment. You see, on the basis of asking what is it, we could determine, yes, if it's okay to kill or not. If it's a spider, rat, bug, yes, absolutely. But if it's brother and someone said mom, let's not kill mom, right? Then we said no. You see, that means we must ask, what kind of a being then is the unborn? Because if it is a human being, my friends, as Greg Kokel says, there is no justification that is adequate. But if the unborn is just a clump of cells, then there is no justification that's necessary. And that is why we must answer the question, what is the unborn, before we can just say it's okay to kill it. Now, some people say things like this. And this is one of the tweets that I saw recently. But isn't an abortion just getting rid of a clump of cells? They asked a question. I appreciate that. Another one said, why are you trying to control what a woman does with her own body? Ladies and gentlemen, we must have answers for this, and it's not based on our opinions, because our opinions can be wrong. So where do we go to find the answer for this? We go to science. Now, some might think, yeah, but what about the Bible? Absolutely. We know the Holy Scriptures affirm the humanity of every human being. In fact, when does God recognize them? At the moment of conception, we see that he recognizes them as a human being, a valuable human being made in Imago Dei, in the image of God. We're all image bearers, even from the moment of conception. But let us consider, what about when you are trying to share your views with someone who does not believe in the authority of scriptures? That is why we use science. So where do we go for that? The science of embryology. The science of embryology. And what does it say in the medical textbooks? From the earliest stages of development, you, as an unborn, you were living, you were distinct, but you were a whole human being nonetheless. So what do I mean by this, that you were living? Well, let's think about it. For something to be alive, it has to actually fit the criteria of a living organism. And you, when you were inside of your mother, you did just that. Think about it. You were growing. You were growing all along. And what were you actually doing? Number one, You were undergoing cellular reproduction, which is why your mother's belly was continuing to grow, because you were growing. We also know that you could metabolize food and use that for energy. You could also respond to stimuli. What about when we say that the unborn is distinct? You see, many people are under the impression that the unborn is part of that woman's body. And because it's part of that woman's body, we cannot tell her what to do with her own body. Now, again, we have to be critical thinkers. Karl Marx said this. Karl Marx, a nation of non-thinkers is easily led. When we listen to Karl Marx, think about that. What he's saying is sometimes we just jump on the bandwagon because it sounds great, but we don't actually take the time to examine it to see if that statement is actually accurate. Can a woman do whatever she wants with her own body? No. She cannot use her body, for example, to impose harm on someone else, even when it comes to suicide. Let's be honest. If someone was standing on top of this chapel building and they were going to end their life, I don't believe there's a single person in here that will look at that person and say, well, it is your life. No. Not a single person would just say, well, it is your body. You do whatever you choose with it. You would try and talk them down because you understand there's something valuable in that human life. But you see, when we say that child, the unborn, is distinct, we mean a couple of things. Number one, the unborn is not part of her body. It is in. In fact, it's in a separate environment called the amniotic sac. Not a single part of that baby's body is actually touching her body. Second, we know the unborn, when you were inside of your mother, had different organs, as you do now. You had a different blood supply, which is often why many have a different blood type than their mothers. You had a unique genetic fingerprint and unique DNA. You see, you never were, and half the time we know, a different gender. You were never part of your body, of her body. You see, in does not mean part of. Again, science. But we also see that science tells us you, when you were inside of your mother, even at that early single cell stage, you were a whole human being. Many people get confused with constructed versus developed. What do I mean by that? You see, most of us are used to a society where we build things. We construct automobiles. We build houses. How many of you have ever been or have you ever seen the store Build-A-Bear Workshop? Yeah, it's almost like, right? And little kids love to go in there and they build their little bear and they even put a little heart in and they love that. But we almost have this mindset that like a Build-A-Bear, we build a baby. No, her body does not actually build that baby. It does not construct that baby. All of its part, everything it has, was already within it. It just needs time to develop. You see, you were a whole human being, different than sperm and cell. College students will often say, but miss, are you saying that sperm and egg are also the same thing? I'm like, no, Tinky Winky, I'm not. So let's think about that. Sperm and egg, yes, they are cells, and yes, they have your DNA coding, but guess what? They are part of a larger organism, which is you. Let's just try something. I want you to lift your hand up for a moment. Now go on and scratch the back of your hand. Okay, now blow. Do you know what you just did? Number one, you actually scratched, you took off some cells that actually had your entire DNA coding. And then when you blew them, you actually blew them on other people. But nobody in here Yeah, I don't see anybody in here calling 911 saying, I think I've committed mass homicide. No, you didn't. Why? Because you see, yes, those cells, while they do have your DNA coding, they are only part of the overall organism, which is you. You see, the unborn did something that no constructed thing could do. We developed ourselves from within. So next I want us then to consider, because we've already addressed what is the unborn, which is the most important question. And I've also made my case to defend what is the unborn using science. Now we're going to look at what is it that makes you valuable. Ladies and gentlemen, go on and look around the room. Look at two people who are different than you. Oh, look at you all smiling at each other. Feel the love, yes. Now, even though every single one of us is different, even within a family, ladies and gentlemen, we're still different. But what is it that makes us think that we have equal value despite those differences? You see, remember when we were talking about the giver? You see, they use terms like equality, but there actually wasn't equality. In fact, if we were to push play again, we would see in the movie that not only do they not have equality, they have deliberate deception. By erasing the truth from everyone, they have no standard for right or wrong. And because they don't know right or wrong, they actually think it's okay that when the elderly get to a certain age, they release them to elsewhere, which is another way of saying they actually kill them. You see, one of the scenes in this movie is when Jonas sees that a baby is actually in the nursery where his father works, the nursery center. And this baby does not weigh enough. And as we fast forward, they're able to take this baby home, and Jonas becomes very attached to Gabriel. But over time, as the giver is giving him and transmitting memories of the past, where now he begins to see injustice, now he begins to see the context of morality, the giver shows him what his father is doing that morning. And you see, there's a set of twins that were born. They weighed the twins, and the one that did not weigh as much as the other, you actually see his father take an injection and stick it on the top of his head. And with that injection, seconds later, the baby dies. And you see, because Jonas's eyes have been opened to the truth, he is completely devastated. He even says, does he not realize what he's doing? He killed him. He just gave him death. And the giver says he doesn't know what he's doing. You see, let's push pause. Many times when we talk about the abortion issue, when we talk about what makes human life valuable, oftentimes we don't know what it is that we're actually talking about. We don't know or recognize what's ultimately at stake. I want us to consider, just consider with me, people that some think are disposable. You see, in that movie, we see the elderly disposed of through euthanasia, and we see babies disposed of through infanticide. But did you know that even in our current society, we do have people that think it's completely acceptable if someone might have a disability? But let's talk about our differences. What is it that makes us valuable? We see here Little Women of LA. How many of you have seen the commercials for this, right? And what about this one? This young lady, can anyone tell me what syndrome do you think she has? Down syndrome, yes. And in fact, according to the Alan Guttmacher Institute, approximately 89% of Down syndrome babies in this country are aborted. Why? Because we live in a society that claims we want equality, but not if that equality means my life is going to be disrupted by someone who is different. You see, we have to think about that. So what is it that gives us value? I'll explain. There's only two ways to look, only two ways to consider what makes us valuable. According to philosophy, you're either valuable because of instrumental properties, meaning your function and your abilities, or you are valuable because you have infinite value that's intrinsic. What do I mean by instrumental? Think of how we play instruments. You saw the worship team. They played instruments. Are you only valuable because of what your body can do right now or your brain? Well, Stephen Schwartz tells us that there's only four differences between the embryo you once were and the young adult you are today, but none of those differences are morally relevant to say you could have been killed at that earlier stage, but not now. What do I mean by that? There's four: size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency. Think SLED. S-L-E-D. Size. Yes, the unborn are smaller, but since when does size mean you have less value or that you don't have as much rights to life? We know men are generally taller than women. Does that mean that us ladies have less value because of that? L, level of development. Yes, the unborn is absolutely less developed, but so are newborn babies. So are toddlers. But that doesn't mean that we can kill toddlers or that they have less value and less rights because they don't have a fully functioning reproductive system. You see, we have to follow where that belief system leads. Why? Because our beliefs determine our behavior. You show me a wrong behavior, and I will show you a wrong belief system. E is environment, because of where we're located. Since when does a change of address, that baby popping out, that journey down the birth canal, 6 to 8 inches, suddenly baby's here, and now it's a valuable human being, which we cannot kill. I know you've all traveled different places, but that doesn't mean that your value changed. No, your value remained the same, regardless of your environment. And last is degree of dependency, because that baby depends on her body. Yes, the unborn depends on her body, but since when does depending on someone else mean that it's okay to kill them? What about people like my dad who has type 2 diabetes? What about people such as the elderly who depend on other people? You see, sometimes when we talk about the issues and we're trying to convey them, sometimes words fail. Sometimes words fail to convey what we're ultimately trying to say. And so what I want us to consider is the story of Emmett Till, 14-year-old young man from Chicago. His mom sent him down to visit family in Mississippi, Money, Mississippi. This is him with his mother. And he went with his friends into Bryant Grocery Store. And this was in 1955, during the time of segregation in August. Well, we don't really know what actually is true, but at the time, he was accused of whistling at a white woman, or maybe even touching her. Well, in 2015, she actually came forward, Miss Carolyn Bryant, and said she actually lied about the whole thing. Well, you see, she told her husband what happened, that this young man whistled at her, winked at her, whatever the case may be, and he and his brother-in-law, they kidnapped him in the middle of the night. They kidnapped him, and sadly, they beat him. They took his body and tied it to a cotton gin fan, and they threw it in the Tallahatchie River. 3 days later, when his body was found, it was unrecognizable. And This is the funeral they had. You see, everybody knew about the lynching of Emmett Till. And when that casket was nailed shut, the mother said, no, I want them to see. In fact, her words were, let them see what I saw. You see, she wanted everyone to see what racism, what discrimination did. And actually, this is the story that actually launched the civil rights movement. You see, sometimes words aren't enough just to convey. You see, this is what Emmett looked like before, and this is what he looked like when they found him. This is what changed people's minds. It was when Mrs. Till said, no, I want them to see what I saw. You see, when we see the reality of something, we can't pretend it's not happening. I am now going to show you a video that just like we see what happened during the time of segregation, we are now going to look at what the aftermath of abortion looks like. Now, you do not have to look. That's why I have a warning. You have the choice to put your head down or even close your eyes. All you will hear with music. For those of you watching, you will see the aftermath, what babies look like after they've been aborted through all three trimesters because it's legal. So I will have them go on and play the video. Ladies and gentlemen, many people have no idea that that's actually what happens during an abortion. Having been the director of a pregnancy clinic, I can tell you, many after the fact would say, how come no one told me that my baby was more than a clump of cells? I would have never done that had I known. You see, and that leads me to my final point. What is our responsibility? As we end thinking about the giver, you see, he gave them truth. And this young man, he makes a great sacrifice because he knows Gabriel is going to be killed if he doesn't do something. He's courageous, and he crosses this boundary line, and when he crosses it, all truth floods back into everyone, and now they have truth. My friends, number one, we need to make sure that we present the gospel. You see, this is where people need forgiveness. Did you know that there are many Christians who have been through an abortion personally, or they've asked someone to have one for them? We need to be givers of the gospel. We need to communicate that the gospel forgives us for our sin. Second, we also need to be clear and make the pro-life case, make that position winsomely with compassion, but we know it's going to take courage. And lastly, my friends, even if you were in that situation where you were with child, I would hope that because of what you've seen today, you would say, I'm going to have the courage to face my responsibility, and I am going to give life. You see, when we think about the ultimate giver, it is Jesus Christ who gave his life for us. And all sin, including the sin of abortion, is covered by his blood. Ladies and gentlemen, let's not just only give the gospel, let's live it, and let's always live to protect life. Thank you.
We hope you found this message a blessing to your life. More Columbia International University Chapel messages are available at iTunes and at podcast.ciu.edu. Learn more about CIU's undergraduate, seminary, and graduate programs at our website, ciu.edu. Columbia International University educates people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for the opportunity to minister to you today.